Morning. Y'all come on in. Let me get everything set up. Excuse me. I haven't talked to anybody other than my coffee this morning. Y'all are my first ones. All right. Throat's a little dry. I was listening to something the other day that was talking about, is there something called throat coat? I need to look this up. I've been meaning to look it up for days now. That helps with your voice and keeps it kind of intact and stuff. So I need to look at that because I definitely you can hear it today. I get hoarse. Throat coat tea. Jacqueline, do you mind? A lot of people know what it is, and I'm a fucking public speaker, and I'm like, what? Somebody tell, I'll tell you what. Yes, delicious tea, but don't drink too much or you'll shit your pants. Well, that's a good thing to know because y'all know me. It's very easy for me to shit my pants. I have had those issues many times. In fact, I think it was around this time last year that I shit my pants while I was walk on a walk. I did a podcast on it. If somebody would love to in the Q&A, just one person, if anybody knows the recipe, will somebody put it in the Q&A and that way Mish can get it to me? That would be awesome. I would really appreciate that. All right. Let's do this. Let's go over what we're going to talk about today. So we are continuing our work on getting rid of excuses. And when I say getting rid of excuses, I don't mean they're going away from your brain. Okay. I'm going to see if I can find this on Instagram. I read something last night and I was like, bam, this is exactly what we mean when we talk about excuses. But I got to look up Mark Manson, who, I can't remember the name of the book he wrote. Oh, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, is so good. So first of all, I read that book ages ago. If you've not read that book, I highly recommend it. He is very much like me. He's going to be, I mean, it's The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, but it's really good for people who are like people pleasers and all kinds of different things. And he was talking about discipline. And the thing that he said is discipline is conditioning your brain to not give a shit if it's hard or if it sucks or if it hurts. If it needs to get done, it just gets done. So that's discipline. But this is the thing I want y'all to hear from this is that you will always have excuses. That is just the way your brain is wired. So we're not ever going to get rid of our excuses. We're going to get rid of the version of us who caves to them, who thinks they're really important, who only listens to them, the part of us that never argues back with them. We're going to get rid of that version and we're going to insert a version of us who is very aware of their excuses, also is very aware of the consequences of abiding by their excuses. And this is a huge piece. Your brain is very wired to avoid pain and to seek pleasure. So, like the whole motivational triad, which is like how our brain works, we want to avoid pain, seek pleasure, and we want to do things as easy as possible. So, if you want to hack weight loss, some of the key points are number one is we need easy things to do. That is why I keep everything simple and no BS. We're fucking eating when we're hungry and we're stopping at enough. Like, that is the bottom line rule. You do not have to remember which foods are good for you, which foods are bad for you. You don't need to know how many calories or anything. You don't need to know if they fit your macros. You just don't need all of that. All you really need is to check in and be like, am I hungry? Because if I'm not, then I'm not going to eat. I'm going to figure out what I really need in this moment instead. If I'm getting to the point where I've had enough, because the goal is to not get overfull, to overeat, to do those things. I'm going to be stopping at enough where I know it's plenty of food for my body to feel safe. It's plenty of food for my body to last for 3 to 4 hours. Like it's the idea of plenty of food. Okay. A lot of you think of stopping at enough as restrictive. Like, well, I'm not going to get enough. It's like, no, we're stopping at enough. We're not stopping before you get enough. It's very different. So we want to keep things simple so that we use the motivational triad, which is the ease part. That's why I don't complicate things. That's why we make a 24-hour plan. The 24-hour plan is there to make things easier, not to make things harder. Most of you make things harder by not planning your food. That means all day long, you have to navigate the version of you in the moment who makes poor choices. I want you to think about that with the 24-hour plan. When we make a 24-hour plan, we're setting ourselves up to be able to eat foods we love, to make sure we have plenty of things planned in case we're really busy that day or things are coming up. We're making sure that we can go out to eat with our family. We're making sure that we know the things that we're going to do in order to lose weight so that we are not left having to make decisions in the moment when we're tired as fuck. Most women are tired as fuck most of the time. The last thing we want is extra work. When you don't make a plan, you have now told the version of you who's tired, overwhelmed, exhausted, anxious, doing for everybody else, people pleasing. You've told her, like, hey, I got one more thing for you to do. Like, I just love burdening you with extra shit when you feel like shit. That's what you do when you refuse to make a plan. Because I am not asking you to make a plan that a fucking nun would follow. All I'm asking you to do is fucking write ding dongs on there. If you want to eat a Snicker every day for lunch, put the Snicker on there. Get over yourself. For fuck's sake. As long as you're not overeating, we are going to lose weight, y'all. Bottom line. The bottom line. But a lot of y'all want to like fuck, like you're just fuckery afoot all the time about like, oh my God, Corinne, I don't know about that Snicker bar. It's so bad for me. Get your pearls off and throw them in the trash. They belong in the trash. If you're wearing pearls and clutching them, they're out of date. And if you're wearing pearls for a fashion statement, you wear them. But most of y'all are slapping your pearls on when you're sitting there being a martyr, when you're sitting there acting like this is going to be harder than it has to be, when you're just wanting to stuff food in your face. If you want to eat chips, let's learn how to eat chips, ladies. Let's stop acting like chips make us fat. Chips made no woman fat ever. You know what makes us fat? Eating chips late at night because we fucking people pleased all day long. We didn't prioritize ourselves. We're wore out and exhausted, and we've got some twisted sense that chips are bad and we don't want nobody to see us, so we're eating in the dark. That makes you fat. If you really want to know what's going on, so don't kid yourself and don't fool yourself with some bullshit excuses that you can't make a plan. The plan is there to heal your relationship with food, to take care of your needs, to make sure you're getting what you need every single day, and to untether the burdens and the anchors that you keep putting on yourself every single day to make good decisions about what you want in the moment. For your future, you are asking her to work twice as hard. Stop doing it. Like all of you. So, I don't know why I went down that road, but here we are. I got to figure out where we were supposed to be going. Number one. I don't know how this happens, but I always get like off on a tangent. And then I'm like, what the fuck was I even trying to say? So, our excuses are not going to go away. We are going to get better at talking to them. So we got that motivational triad. So the whole planning thing. Now I remember what I was talking about. Ease. We got to put ease in if you think you're going to want to do it. Okay. So if you're talking about your plans and you're talking about stopping at enough and you're talking about hunger like a complete asshole, that's where you've got to start. Your brain will fight against sleep, water, hunger, and enough, and your plan. If it sounds hard the way you describe it. And I just want all of you to know when I like y'all are just like, preach, fire, oh my God, motivational. This is amazing. Why? Because I don't talk about the basics like y'all. And we're talking about the same fucking thing. Like if for a moment it makes sense. Then you have to agree with me on this one point. The way I'm talking about it is one version of how I could be talking about this. Then here's Corinne with like this fucking fresh approach. She's got a whole new set of ideas around this. That means that what you're thinking is optional, just like what I'm thinking is optional. So now we just got to decide, do we take option A, which makes us feel like ass, makes it feel really hard, drags us down, unmotivates us, and is not likely to get us to take action, or do we choose B? Behind door number B is looks like 100 pounds of weight loss. That bitch lost weight doing that shit. That bitch lost weight thinking that way. That bitch has helped thousands of women do it too. Maybe option B and rewiring how I think about it might be better. Maybe I should try it. When my brain offers up the old shit, I'm like, no, I'm fucking sick and tired of talking about this harder than it has to be. I'm done making weight loss harder on myself than it has to be. I've literally joined one of the easiest fucking weight loss programs in the world. And yet here I am in the same pattern. How can I make this harder than it needs to be? Give in to the idea that the hardest part is negotiating with your brain every day. It is not going to be because you can't eat certain things. All those things that we used to think that made weight loss so hard, we're not even doing here. We've removed all those things. Now we're just left what's actually hard, which is listening to how we think and changing that every fucking day so we can feel better, not just listening to it and going like, yeah, that's the truth. It's very little of what you think is the truth. Now, the second part of the motivational triad is our brains are desperate for pleasure. They want pleasure. They will look for pleasure in all the places and all the wrong places too. So we have to be very aware of what level of pleasure are we giving ourselves, because I firmly believe this. A lot of your weight that you're carrying around right now is because you don't get pleasure in life or enough pleasure in life unless you're eating. It is the only time that you're feeling rested. It's the only time you relax. It's the only time you let go. It is the only time that you turn off your worries, you turn off your burdens, you turn off your stresses and your worries and shit. It's the only time you do is when you're eating. So it would make sense that if that is the only time that you have relief and it's the only time you have pleasure, that your brain would overly seek food. Because it wants you to have that. Our job in No BS is to notice how much pleasure am I experiencing in my real life? And if it ain't damn much, what do I need to do or think or change my mind about or get coached on in order to let go of some of it? Because here's the thing. Some of you have got what I call like legit burdens. But this is the problem. Most of us have a vast majority of unlegit version burdens. So let's take, for example, that you are caring for either an elderly parent who's got dementia, you're caring for a young child who's on the spectrum or has needs. Okay. Now, some of that is just what we call actually hard. It is tough. You are stretched and you are pulled, and we want to admit that. But then a lot of you carry what's called the unnecessary burden around it. I coached someone not too long ago. Her mom has since passed. I won't say her name just in case, but she was caring for her mother who was suffering from dementia and dying. And it was a load. And she was tired. Rightly so. But instead of being compassionate about being tired, she felt guilty for not wanting to go. Even though she was going, she was feeling guilty because she wasn't looking forward to it. Because I guess she didn't show up like some kind of like magical fairy from, the Wizard of Oz. That's unnecessary suffering. When you have that small child and they're wearing you the fuck out and they are throwing the fits and doing the things and blah, 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 unnecessary suffering is telling yourself they'll never get better. I shouldn't get so upset about this. I should want to help them. Like, no, you shouldn't. People in the hurricanes who've lost things, that's legit. 100%. But let's say that you've been doing cleanup duty, doing the things, but you're sitting around regretting that you moved there. You're sitting around worrying about what might happen when you've got plenty of things today that you can affect and influence and control. That's where we have to start looking at, where am I doing some unnecessary suffering? That's where we can turn some temperatures down. So it's really, really important that we realize our brain is going to seek pleasure. And especially when we're in high stressful periods, it's really going to seek pleasure unless you are turning the temperature down on what we call the negotiable pain, the stuff that we're inflicting on ourselves, the unforced errors, as we say in the footballs. Then the last one is the big one. Our brain will do all it can to avoid pain. And so if you only talk about your weight loss as painful and hard and tough and unfair, and here's all the things I don't get to do, if you only do that, your brain is wired to avoid pain. You have now painted your weight loss picture as a very painful experience. It might as well be quicksand with snakes, thorns, and hot lava all in one. And you're wondering why you're avoiding doing it. Your brain is actually doing exactly what it was designed to do in that moment, avoid doing painful things. This is why it's so important for you to not sit there and just paint a painful picture of weight loss. If I was you, and this is actually, all I do is write shit for y'all. I am on fire right now with content. I just finished writing your New Year's workshop. We hadn't even done the handling the holidays yet. I just filmed it a couple of weeks ago, but I just finished writing the New Year's workshop. And in there, I am giving y'all a little bonus course on your whys. I've never taught it this way before. It is a brand new look at it. And it's like, we're not even doing it on New Year's in the workshop. Y'all gonna just get this as something you can do any time of the year. But in that, I talked about the power of pain and that you need to paint the picture of staying like you are and not doing this work and as painful. Here's all the things I miss out on. Just like the 24-hour plan, instead of saying, well, it's so hard to pick what I want to eat because if I write things down, I might not be able to eat what I want. That's painful. It doesn't sound pleasurable. It for sure doesn't lean into ease. But if you say to yourself, I'm going to make 24-hour plans to make sure that I learn how to eat foods I love, to make sure that I'm never going hungry, that I've always got plenty of food to choose from. I'm also going to make 24-hour plans to make sure the tired version of me never has to make a decision ever again in the moment that she's going to regret. I don't want to put her in that position anymore. I'm going to make 24-hour plans so every day I can wake up and I can know what's working and what's not in my food life. When we start describing it that way, it sounds a lot better. And when you describe like staying the way I am, this is all the pain. You know, when I don't make those 24-hour plans, I'm left to just go along with the crowd and whatever they want to do, and they don't have my best interest in mind. When I don't make my 24-hour plan, I got to stand in front of the refrigerator every night debating if I'm going to get my shit together or not. When I don't make my 24-hour plan, I got to wake up tomorrow wondering why I can't do this. I got to wake up tomorrow with my pants not fitting right. I got to wake up tomorrow because I suffered heartburn all night long. Like, we need to paint the pain. So we have to work with our brains because the only other way that I can help y'all is if I open up a clinic where I'm just like, you know what? They just don't need those brains anymore. Let's just remove them. The only way you'd be able to lose weight. So we got to work with our brain. Because that motivational triad is not changing. It is not changing. We came out of the box with that thing. All right. Somebody asked, what was the first point of the motivational triad? It's ease. Your brain's going to seek ease. So you got to set things up to be easy. Can't set things up to be too hard. Your brain will try to avoid anything that's hard. It's always going to be seeking ease. Okay. Let's see. Let me get my notes up. All right. So we're talking about excuses. And today we're talking about busting your excuses for breaking your plan. So we're going to like zero in now on what it is about breaking plans. So the first thing is step one. If you are going to stop making excuses to bust your plan, is you've got to make plans every single day so that you can see what your excuses are. And this is the big mistake that I see a lot of people make. They give up on making plans because they aren't following them. Biggest mistake by far I see people make when it comes to no BS. Your plan, it's not about following it. I don't create the plan. We're not doing the plan solely so that you can follow it perfectly every day. We use the plan as a way to know what excuses are getting us off our game. Let's say you make a plan for your food and you don't follow it. This allows us to see, like, did you break your plan just because you didn't want to hurt someone's feelings? That's good to know, because now we can work on, all right, now in the future, we don't want to just say like, well, now I've got to start telling people no and hurt their feelings. You need to be working on, do people's feelings actually get hurt when I say no? Or is that something I've been telling myself for a long time? I wonder what people would actually think. Some of you are just thinking shit and you haven't even questioned if it's true or not in so long that you're missing obvious wins. So let's say that you make your plan and you notice for 3 straight weeks, you do good all day until dinner. And then every night at dinner, you're just like eating whatever you want and it starts a fucking eating cycle. That's called good to know. Like somebody said, well, my shame kicks in when I don't follow my plan. That's good to know, because you know what you got to work on, Melanie? Unnecessary shame. When you stop making plans, you never learned how to be the kind of person that knows how to be there for yourself. You're like, I know how to be there for myself. Avoid me. That is not being there for yourself. The better thing to do would be like, I am feeling shame. Is this something to feel ashamed about? Or is my pattern eating at night signaling there's a bigger problem? It ain't my shame that needs to get solved. The bigger problem is the room is, what is it about at night that I feel like I need to eat in order to be okay? That's the like fucking question we want to be asking. So when we're doing our plans, we want to make sure that we're not like, if your thought is I'm supposed to follow them and do them right, then of course, when you do them wrong, you would feel shame, not because you did it wrong, but because your thought about the plan is broken. It's a terrible thought to have. The goals with the plan, plans have multiple goals. One is to take care of your needs. So sometimes what happens is when you're breaking plans, you will see there's a lot of people that end up seeing like, oh, I'm not taking care of my food needs. I'm planning like I'm doing an old diet. I'm not actually planning foods that I like. So that could be one thing that gets uncovered. Another thing that could get uncovered is a lot of times when we're breaking plans, we start noticing areas in our life where our emotional needs aren't getting met. And so now when we break the plan, we see an area we can target to fix our emotional needs. We also can see broken plans. Sometimes it's actually a good reason. For a lot of you, you'll notice that you may break plans But when you do, you actually make better decisions. So, like, let's say that you had planned, this happens to me a lot. Like last night, I was supposed to have chicken livers. Last night was supposed to be my big chicken liver night and stuff. It was on my plan. I go to order it. They're fucking out of chicken livers. I was so pissed. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? How is there a sellout on sold out on chicken livers? My ass. I've worked in the restaurant industry enough to know sold out means we didn't get our shipment in. We didn't plan well. So I didn't get my chicken livers. And a lot of you, like, literally would be like, oh, I broke my plan, man. And you'd clutch your pearls. I ended up having soup last night. I was just like, you know what? If I can't have my chicken livers, I'm just not ordering food. I'm not going to just order meatloaf or order something else because I really wanted chicken livers. I want to save that for later in the week. At some point, they're going to have them. So tonight, I'm just going to have soup. I ended up eating healthier last night. I would still mark that as not following my plan. And I would mark that on my habit tracker with like a special little smiley face or something to show, like, oh, look. Sometimes when I break my plans, it's for really good reasons, and I actually even do better. Good to know. So breaking your plans don't create the shame. When your plans are broken, what I would love for you to feel is curious. I wonder why. I wonder what pattern I can find here. I wonder what it is I needed. And then sometimes, y'all, you're going to break plans, and it is not going to have anything to do with emotional eating. Sometimes you're going to break plans because you just like you were just doing something and you totally forgot to eat what you wrote down. It's good to know. And rather than being ashamed of that, just like, oh, I got busy and I wasn't even thinking about it. So the next time I'm having a busy day, maybe on those days, I just put a sticky note someplace to remind me of what I'm going to eat. But the big thing about your plans is for all of you, you really need to be making them so we can really see what it is you truly need. Because at the end of the day, and no BS, you're not losing weight because we're eating because we're hungry and we're stopping at enough. At the end of the day, the reason why all of you will lose your weight and be able to keep it off is because we are solving the root cause problems of why you're eating. And if you don't make plans, you have now taken away your ability to see the root cause problems. And if you don't solve those, you don't feel great. And if you don't solve those, you end up losing weight, then you gain weight back because those root problems, they've got to be plugged, or eventually you'll plug them with food again. Because once the emergency of losing weight, the intensity and the focus is over, you still got your root cause problem staring you in the face. So, like, a root cause problem for most women is just not feeling like you're good enough. Like, a lot of women go around, and even if you're not self-loathing and like attacking yourself vehemently all day, a lot of us go around just thinking we're just not quite good enough. If we just looked a certain way, if I just worked a little harder, if I could just do this extra stuff for my family, I would just be such a better mother. Like, we just are always sitting around thinking about how we're just short of being good enough. That is exhausting. It is very, very exhausting. It wears on you. You may not be beating yourself up, but you damn sure aren't giving yourself credit either. And it just wears on you and it makes you tired. And so, for a lot of you who just feel slightly not good enough, always just like something's amiss, you'll lose your weight. And while you're losing your weight, it will feel intoxicating because that will be the only place in life that you're giving yourself credit. Like, oh my God, doing so good. Like, you'll get it, like the scale will go down and just be like, yes, like finally, look at me, blah, blah, blah. Then you lose your weight, or you get to the natural place where it stalls. And that feel good enough is now not getting plugged. This is especially prevalent when you hit goal weight. You can ride out for about 2 months, then your brain starts getting used to the new you. And it doesn't have a way to feel good about itself anymore because it's just like, I'm just used to you being thin now. I'm not like noticing it. I'm not excited about it anymore. Like, I'm not down on it, but I'm just like, you kind of go back into the little bit of being critical. Like, now it's like, because we never plug the hole of being good enough, guess what we're doing? We're looking in the mirror and being like, yeah, I lost all that weight, but I didn't realize I was gonna have some saggy skin. I mean, I lost all that weight, but I still can't quite wear the things I really want to wear. I don't really look the way I wanted to. Then we're just right back where we started. The not good enough that never got plugged is staring us in the face. And we have nothing to plug it with because we never learned how. We didn't do the things on the way down the scale that would have alerted us to the fact, like if you weren't planning and stuff and noticing certain little patterns, you were just willpowering your way through and stuff. You didn't notice those little holes that need to be plugged. And when the weight loss is over, you start eating again. Okay. So I hope I've sold you first on the ideas of step one. We have got to make sure that we are making our plans so that we can see our excuses when they come up. The other thing about making a plan also is it will help you look ahead at your day to help you try to navigate some excuses. That's one of the things that I do with my plan. And I know that there's a question, there's kind of like a question worded that way in the planner, but the way I think about it is I like to think about like, what's going to get in my way today? And I try to always write down like an excuse that I have. Just like today, I was writing about, I'm working out this afternoon. Because I had to start working first thing this morning. And I wrote on there, the thing that's going to get in my way today on going to the gym is I'm going to tell myself I'm too tired. Here's what I know about today. Wednesdays are my busiest day of the week. This is the day I do the most calls. I am on until about 3 o'clock today. I will be tired. So now I've got to think about what do I want to be telling myself? When my brain is going to be exhausted, yawning, coming off all the adrenaline of doing my calls, and it still needs to go get in the gym. So I wrote down practical things like you're going to want to tell yourself you're too tired. Here's what I know. You can rally. That's also true. You can go and get started and see what happens to just see if you're too tired or if you're just unmotivated, which is very different. Because I always like to tell myself, Corinne, there's a difference between being motivated and a difference between being tired. Unmotivated is one of those things you're just going to go do it. You don't need to be motivated. You just need to know it's good for you long term. Those are hard decisions to make. I'm willing to make tough decisions in that moment. Now, too tired, very often, I would say 90% of the time, I go do something to see how tired I am. So I will go to the gym and I will start. And if I'm too tired, I will pull the plug. I'll do something else or I'll just go home. But more times than not, once I get going, I surprise myself. I do rally. And so those are the things I have to tell myself on paper so that I'm prepared today at 3 o'clock when the version of me who's sitting there is just like, oh God. I also laid out my clothes. They are on the bed because here's what I know about Corinne. When she says she's too tired and she wants to skip out on doing something she said she would do, the first thing I do is go to bed. And so I've laid my workout clothes exactly where my ass will go plant. So I can't eat. It's like I don't even have to walk to the closet. My shoes and my clothes are sitting right there to remind me you said you were going to go. And so I just tell myself, all you got to do is put the clothes on. So the first thing I do is I tell myself I got to put the clothes on. Then the next thing I say is like, all right, what is next? You just got to get in the car. We just need to get in the car. Let's go get in the car and see what we think. I get in the car and then I'm just like, well, can you just go on to the gym? Let's just get there and let's do a warm-up set and let's just see what happens. And then by that point, I've got momentum. Okay. Step two. So step one is we got to make our plans, right? We got to make the plans to so we can see what our excuses are so that we can start overcoming them instead of just abiding by them. Number two is you want to use your discovery worksheets to see what you were thinking when you were breaking your plan. And this is where the discovery worksheet starts removing the judgment out. So a lot of you want to do your plan and then you break it. Instead of doing a discovery worksheet, you beat yourself up and then you quit doing your plans. Stop doing that. The discovery worksheet is a very useful thing to help you dial in what's going on. We have it broken down into two segments. You either were habit or mindless eating, which doesn't take any thought work. We just are like, oh, we've identified this. We just got to come up with simple techniques to try to break that. Because we're not emotionally attached to those. So that just takes time and patience. That's it. And getting you aware of it. But then we have the emotional eating side. And I will just tell you, on average, 30% of overeating usually falls in the mindless and habit eating centers. 70% of overeating falls into some type of emotional eating. We are either trying to create a feeling or we are trying to like repress a feeling, bury a feeling. So sometimes we're just trying to create some fun because we don't have enough fun. We're trying to create some connection because we don't really know how to connect with our partners or our children unless we're eating. It's just something that we've been trained to do. We may be lonely at night. And like I will give you an example from my own life. Mr. Crabtree has been going to bed at 6:40. 7 o'clock. Like last night, we were literally laying in bed watching TV. And I said, hey, I want to like, can I lay on your chest and watch TV? We rarely snuggle. Like we are just not snugglers. And I felt like snuggling last night. I get on his ass. I'm like laying there and he's laid like this, just sprayed out. And 7:05, I had to move because he was snoring so loud. I was like, well, he's done gone to bed. He goes to bed so early. And so I'm laying there. It's like 8:30. And I start wanting to go get a snack. I'm like, I want to go get a Clif Bar. That is like my biggest issue. It is always if Chris is asleep, and it's not that I wouldn't eat it in front of him, but I'm just lonely. I'm not even trying to secret eat. I'm just kind of bored. Like I'm just wishing that he was awake and stuff. And so last night, I just sat there and told myself, you're just bored and lonely. We don't need to eat. It is tough. You want to be talking to him and he's asleep. That's all I told myself. It's like, you don't need to eat. It's you just miss him. You just wish he was awake. I don't need to be mad at him. I don't need to eat over it. I don't need to do anything. I just need to know he goes to bed early. So, and I just sat there and thought, like, what can we do about this? One of the suggestions I had for myself is, A, we know Chris is now going to bed between like 6:30 and 7:30 every night. I just need to make sure that when we are awake, that I'm not diddling. So this is what I noticed last night as I was thinking through all this. Rather than eating a Clif Bar, this is the insight that I got. Very often he comes upstairs around 5 to 5:30, and I sit on my phone, scrolling Facebook, answering y'all's questions. And then I get on Pinterest. And then a lot of times I play my New York Times games. And I'm just like, we need to do that some other time. You could be doing that while he's sleeping. Don't waste the time y'all have together with stupid distractions that you could do later. That insight came from not eating a Clif Bar at 9 o'clock at night or 8:30, whatever time it was. I would not have gotten that insight. I would not have figured out what was going on if I was sitting there scarfing down a Clif Bar, feeling sorry for myself that my husband goes to bed early. Now, I'm not saying that some of you ain't got some marital issues and all kinds of stuff that run much deeper than that. I'm very lucky. I don't have super deep marital issues. But we have little things like that. Look for the little places in your life that you can make better. Look for the little things in your life where a simple saying no to eating something, or just even acknowledging that you want to eat something, where even if I'd ate the Clif Bar, if I had just done the discovery worksheet this morning, I probably would have gotten to the same insights. And then with those, I would have just ate one Clif Bar and I would have had a key insight to try to see if it makes a difference. Not only in my marriage, but in my ability to keep my weight off or to lose weight if you're losing weight. That's why, like, one overeat, y'all, or when you overeat, it's not the end of the world. You don't really gain weight over them until you quit dissecting them. When you start ignoring them, acting like they're not happening, being ashamed of them, doing everything and anything you can to avoid thinking about them, that's when you're gaining weight. The people who are like actively working on them, going to ask coaches, talking about them in the Facebook group, looking for suggestions, don't be looking for camaraderie. You want to know what pisses Corinne off the most? You say, like, this is something I'm fucking up. Tell me I'm not alone. Why would you ever say that? I want you to think about that. You want a lot of people to just say, like, yeah, we all do that, so that you can now, like, say, I must be bro like to validate brokenness. Do not do that. Go in there and say, I know I'm not alone. So, those of you who've solved it or who are trying new things, give me your best tips. That's the way a no BS woman shows up for herself. So we're going to do our discovery worksheets because they're going to show us some of our basic human needs that aren't going met. They're going to show us our habit stuff. They're going to show us our mindless eats. They're going to show us what we need to see to plug those long-term holes so that we don't lose our weight and then have to gain it back because we never solve the root cause problems. All right, number three is you're going to pick an excuse that comes up most. And you're just going to go to work on it. So you can use your discovery worksheets to find those patterns, to find those excuses. And then I want you to think about, like, I want you to think about them in a lot of ways. Are your excuses really true? That is like the first thing. A lot of times our excuses just feel like they're the truth. I need you to ask yourself, is it really true that I can't do this because of that? Or is it that I don't want to do this because of that? Sometimes that is the most important thing you can tell yourself. It's not that I can't do something, it's that I won't do it for this reason. Try that with some of your excuses. So, any excuse that sounds like I can't because of, I want you to tell yourself, I won't because of. Try that first. The next thing to do is just to poke holes in your excuses. You might not be able to do all the things, but what could you do? Where could you start? Try that next. Take things to ask coaches. When you find an excuse, let them coach you on it. They know how to ask questions that will help you unlock insight in your own mind. That is the goal of the coaches. The coaches are just sitting around desperate to ask you questions to help you unlock what you already know deep down inside. Most of you know all the things. You've just got so much shit over it that you can't see it. And it's like we've got bleach wipes and Windex for days, and we're just helping you clean the shit, get the shit off the windows so that you can see through and see your answers and what's going on. Okay, I'm going to answer a couple of questions. One of the big things I want everyone doing this week is I want you using the Facebook group to talk about your excuses, but I do not want it to be a kumbaya of feeling sorry for ourselves. I want you to pick one of your excuses this week, and I want you to go to the Facebook group and say, this is the excuse I'm working on this week. This is the one I'm not going to listen to for a solid week just to see what life would be like. Is it as hard to ignore it as I thought it would be? To just do whatever I said I was going to do. Sometimes, like a lot of times, there's an excuse of, let's say you trying to stop it enough at dinner. And one of your excuses is, well, I'll get hungry later. So I'm just going to eat a little extra right now, and a little bit won't hurt. Very common excuse. It's laced in the fear. This week, just try and see, do you get hungry later? For a lot of excuses, what ends up happening is we do the thing that we're really afraid of, and then we realize, like, oh, fuck, I was making it way harder than it was. I was making it scarier than it is. I was making it more difficult than it needed to be. I was creating a lot of drama around it that just doesn't need to be there. Because when I actually tried it, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. So now we don't even have to work on that excuse anymore because we just gave ourselves proof that what we thought wasn't true. So I want y'all using the Facebook group to say, like, this is the excuse I'm working on, and this is how I plan to work on it this week. And if anybody's got tips that's worked for them or things that they think instead, I would love to hear it in the comments. Okay. Nick asks, I'm good at home, but when I go to work, I eat whatever's offered at the cafeteria as I get busy and stressed at work. You're not eating whatever's offered because you're busy and stressed. You're eating whatever's offered because you think stress is something that you should eat over. Very different. Stress doesn't make everyone eat. Here's how I know. When my husband is stressed, he lose and my son is are stressed, they lose their appetite. My niece is the same way. If she's anxious, she can't eat without getting sick. Like, she either has diarrhea or she vomits. She just gets like almost crippling anxiety around things. That's how we know stress and anxiety doesn't make you eat. You choose to deal with your stress and anxiety with food in the cafeteria instead of talking to your boss about what's going on, instead of confronting coworkers about what's going on, saying no to things that you probably have the power to say no to, but you keep telling yourself you shouldn't because you would be seen as bad. Like, I want you to be thinking about this really has nothing to do with the cafeteria. So, what am I stressed and anxious over? And what of that stuff am I avoiding dealing with? Right now, I'm dealing with it in the cafeteria. I'm like, you know what? I'm so stressed and anxious. I should really go to the cafeteria and eat. This is just like for all of you. If your 7-year-old came home from school and said, I am so fucking stressed about math, they're like wanting us to learn the times tables. And I just can't do that. But I can't tell my teacher no. And you look at I'm saying, you know what? We should open a bottle of wine and let's talk about this. Like, everything's better after a bottle of wine. And you can go to school tomorrow. And then they come home the next day and they're just like, I don't know. I feel like the dumbest 2-year-old in the or the 7-year-old in the room. I'm just not getting it. My teacher's just, she's stressing me out, telling me, you know, I won't get into a good college if I don't learn my times two tables. And you're just like, you know what? I get it. Cake. We're going to have cake tonight. Let's see if eating cake makes this better. That is what y'all do. And you would never tell a 7-year-old you're stressed and anxious because of the times table. You're stressed and anxious because you have to go to school. You would just be like, what is it about multiplication that is hard for you? You'd be working through it and figuring out how to help them. Do it for your fucking self. Quit answering obvious problems with stupid shit like food. Food's never gonna make you feel better at work, Nick. All it's going to do is get you through today, and then you got to go back tomorrow and do the same thing over and over and over again. Let's figure out. I think that, Nick, it's box breathing is fine, like calming your nervous system down, but you need to sit, Nick, on a Saturday afternoon when you are away from work, and you need to work on why am I so stressed and anxious at my job? What's going on there? And you need to separate out what is factual from what is Nick overthinking, what is Nick worrying about, What is she thinking other people think of her? What is she catastrophizing? Let me give you a new term. A friend of mine came over to visit. Him and his husband came over the other day. And my friend Roberto, his husband Warren. First of all, Warren is hilarious. Warren's on the spectrum. And he's got severe ADHD. And he was just talking about how he's like, you know, my brain just runs like nonstop and stuff. And he said, I know when it's going to shit, when I go into hypothetical hell. I was like, hypothetical hell. I was like, Warren, I am stealing this. I was like, you better believe it. It's going on some podcasts. I'm going to be teaching this inside my membership, all the things. And Felicia knows Warren. Yes, Warren is funny. So he also loves the octopuses. Just want to say he's the, he runs the world's largest octopus fan club with over 1 million followers. I was like, what? I didn't even realize there was so much going on with the octopus. He even wrote a book for the National Geographic, if that says anything. But Warren was like, I go to hypothetical hell. So Nick, I want you to be thinking about like, what is so stressful and anxious about my job? Like you work in the emergency department. Great. You're probably skilled. They don't put assholes in there. They don't put dumbasses in there, but you probably are sitting there worrying. Like I have coached so many pharmacists on this thought. I'm going to kill someone. So I got to be on guard. I'm like, that is the worst thought. How about I ain't ever killed anybody. I know what I'm doing as a pharmacist. I know how to be careful. Like, look for the spaces, Nick. This is what I would start with. Where are you conjuring up extra stress and anxiety? Like, there might be some stuff about your job we can't change, but I will bet you there's a lot about Nick and how she thinks about herself and how she's internalizing and interpreting the world that we can level up for real. And that's what we work on in Ask Coaches. Because if you work on that, cafeteria is not going to be a siren in the middle of the day singing its sweet ass song to get you to come in there. All right, Gloria. I noticed my overeat. I am disappointed that I had such doable goals for the end of the year. And here I am not losing and I won't reach those again. I am sad, disappointed in me. And so I ate. How do I turn this around again? First and foremost, why are we sad? I'm fine with you being disappointed, but we need to figure out what's so saddening about this. It's like, I thought I would have this unlocked by now, but I don't yet. That is such a big difference than here I am again, fucking up, blah, blah, blah. Gloria, this is just, again, it's a shitty way to tell the story. If you're going to, like, I want you to think about this, Gloria. If one day you lose your weight, that means there was a version of Gloria that had to struggle right now to get there. Now, if the future version of you doesn't lose weight, then that version of you is doing what she's doing today, which is making a mountain out of a molehill. It's like, just decide, how bad do you want to feel about this? Or how do I want to approach this in a way that has me today eating a little better than yesterday? Those two are optional. Now, it takes deliberateness to think that way. Deliberateness. This is not automated. All of you. But this is why I want you typing your questions in and I want you writing things down. Because when you see it, now you can look at it and be like, is this the way I want to be describing this? Do I want to be describing it as I did it again? Which means I think I'm never going to be able to do it. Or do I want to be describing it as I haven't unlocked it yet? I want to go back through and I want to go and look through all of my food plans and stuff. And I want to see my patterns so I can plug the root cause holes. Because if I'm not making the progress I thought I would, it's probably because there's still root cause holes. I'm just trying to stop it enough. I'm not trying to solve the problem. I'm just trying to follow the plan. I'm not trying to solve my problems. I'm just trying to wait for hunger. I'm not trying to solve my problems. All of the basics are there to illuminate the problems to solve. And when you solve the problems, those basics get a lot easier. But we do the basics in an effort to do two things. That is how we're eventually going to eat on autopilot. And until we get there, they are there to show us every single time we don't do that and why. And it isn't because we're a fuck up, and it isn't because we're broken, and it's not because something's wrong with you. It is because there's something going on underneath the hood. And we need to, just like a car, when the engine light and the check engine light comes on, we need to go check the engine. Your overeats, you're not following the plan. It's just like, bing, check engine light, bing, tire pressure light, bing, running low on gas, bing, check your brakes. It's just alerting you to go fix the car. But y'all are like, no, I don't want to see the dashboard. Just, I'm going to get in the car. I'm going to turn it on. I'm going to just start driving and I'm not looking at the dashboard and I pray to God I get there. I mean, I am driving for God's sakes. That's not going to happen. You're not going to get there with your eyes closed, dear. It's not going to happen. I am going through perimenopause and feeling fatigued 70%, 75% of the day. Welcome to my club, Elba. We're over here in the 50. I'm feeling you. My thoughts are focused on feeling tired. This has made it hard to get up in the morning and go into the gym. I just have to tell myself all the time, like, this is the part of life where you are tired. And what can you do at the gym too? That is literally what I tell myself because there is a fatigue that goes on. And I tell myself, I am doing everything I can to help myself. I am making sure I'm getting my water. I sleep more than I used to. I used to just get by with literally just 7 hours of sleep. I cannot get by through a day anymore without eight. I have to get eight. So I just tell myself, this is the season of life where we go to the gym tired. Now, I have changed a few things. I lift 4 days a week. I do not do hard cardio anymore. Like, I have adjusted a lot of things, but there's only so much I can do. I'm just going through a hormonal phase. And so we just have to think like that. And some, and now, like Robin was saying, sometimes it takes me 9 hours. So adjust things. And I also told Jane one day, I said, hey man, when you listen to me on Marco Polo, you ding me. If I'm so, like bitching about being tired, just tell me, like, you're doing it again. I know I'm tired. I do not have to verbalize it all the time. How do I make the long-term impact of my immediate choices seem more present when I'm working to make effective choices in the moment? All right, let me read that one more time. It's kind of like very worded like an adult. How do I make the long-term impact of my immediate choices seem more present? Write them down as much as you often can every single day. Like right now, if your long-term choices aren't getting into on your radar, then every single morning you need to write down five reasons why making short-term decisions today, like, and then list the ones you normally make, are screwing me over. I'm feeling this way. I'm feeling this way. I'm feeling this way. You have to train your brain to know those reasons. Right now, they just know the reasons to do something to get you to feel the pleasure, to feel the ease, to avoid the pain. Now, what we got to do is we have to flip the script. We have to like really work through that stuff on paper often enough to where your brain is going to say, like, it would be so easy to just eat what I want right now. And then your brain immediately come in and say, like, yeah, and you're also probably going to beat yourself up tomorrow over it. That's the way my brain is now. So just as we close it out, my excuses have never gone away. My urge talk, my wanting to do things, it just doesn't go away because the primitive brain that seeks pleasure, the, you know, what we talked about earlier, the motivational triad, that doesn't get erased in your brain. It's always there. What does happen though is you can train your brain to have a bullshit excuse and to swoop in with the other side of the story. I always feel like if I know both sides of the story, it is a lot easier for me to figure out what's really going on. When I don't know both sides of the story, I just hook and like I'm like a fish getting hooked in the water and just believing everything my brain said. Okay. Y'all have a good one. I will see y'all on Sunday for some coaching. Don't forget to show up. All right. Bye, y'all.